is Art Breaking, the Thursday afternoon arts magazine with Charlie Finch.
Thank you, Shelton Walden. Welcome back from Minneapolis. Is it true that you can walk underground for miles there? today's show honors one of the greats, long gone but still with us, Jimi Hendrix. There's an incredible show that opens tonight at the Ambassador Gallery on 137 Spring Street, and it runs through May 9 of different photographers' pictures of the great Jimi Hendrix. And we have the legendary British photographer Garrett Mankiewicz here, whose work you know from the early seminal pictures of Jimi Hendrix, from the great Stones album covers like Between the Buttons. We're going to talk about his photography and reminisce about the great guitarist and play his music. Let's start out with Killing Floor live at Monterey.
The Jimi Hendrix
Opus tonight at the Ambassador Gallery is located at 137 Spring Street between Worcester and Green Streets. Hours are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. weekdays and 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday and 12 to 6 p.m. Sunday. So it's open 7 days a week. For information, you can call 715-1551. And Garrett Mankiewicz, anyone who ever collected British rock in the 60s, ipso facto owns your work. This may date us both, but I can remember going and buying the beautiful Between the Buttons cover that you did and just staring at it for a couple of days before I even put the record on. Just any image you can think of from the great British rock era of the 60s is associated with this gentleman's work. Let's start off by saying, how did you meet Hendrix? You took the famous pictures of him in a military jacket. Describe the session for us.
Well, Charlie, the session was pulled together by Chas Chandler. And Chas was a friend of mine, somebody I'd worked with quite a lot. And he brought, as you know, he brought Hendrix over to England. And I had been doing quite a few things for him. So he said, how would I feel about working with Jimmy? And I was absolutely overjoyed and thrilled.
Now, Chas Chandler, of course, was the great bass player for Eric Burdon and the Animals. And the guy who really discovered Jimi Hendrix, how did he discover Hendrix? Hendrix was on tour with the Isley Brothers or something?
He discovered Hendrix playing here, I think in Greenwich Village, but I'm not absolutely certain of that. It at that time, it didn't really seem the details, the facts, the fine print didn't really seem that relevant. What really was important that he'd heard and seen this extraordinary guitarist who had marvellous presence, who didn't appear to have any sort of following or indeed... if he did, it was an underground following. And Chas just seemed to recognize that Hendrix would just take London by storm, that it was a sort of a return for what had been called the British invasion, that somebody who was obviously so ahead of his time would score in London and would have such huge success. Chas had great ears, and I mean, he obviously knew what he was doing.
Hendrix had the reputation of being a very soft-spoken, quiet, shy person. True?
Absolutely. It's a cliche, and it's almost embarrassing to sort of repeat it. But he was. He was humble, modest, shy, quiet. He had a great sense of humor. I had three sessions with him at my studio. They were all very enjoyable. And what we would do is we would never start until late in the morning, lunchtime. And I'd always have some food at the studio, and we'd usually just sort of talk for an hour or so, and then just gently move into the pictures, and 2 or 3 hours later, he'd sort of go off.
And in the pictures that are featured in the show, there's a couple of shots of Jimmy alone and some seminal pictures with bandmates Noel Redding and Mitchell. It was just a matter of using a couple of rolls of film and mixing the guys up, so to speak?
They usually shot more than that. Usually shot about 6 or 7 rolls of film and maybe 2 or 3 different backgrounds and changed the lighting and tried to produce maybe 6 different photographs out of a session. I mean, that's what I was sort of try and set out to do. But the interesting thing is the example that you're looking at now, which is in the show, which is called Contact, which is a contact sheet. That's a single roll of film, 12 frames, printed on one sheet at the same time. And this is normally how we present proofs at a session. And I thought that it would be really interesting for people to see that. So we made it, I think it's probably the biggest contact sheet in the world. It's about 4 foot by 5 foot. And the interesting thing for me, the thing that I'd forgotten, hadn't really thought about, was that the image of Jimmy that is so famous, the one that we've silkscreened into the principal image for the exhibition, the poster, is actually the last frame on that particular roll. It's number 12. It's the only shot on that roll without the experience. So it was just something I did at the end of that particular roll. And it's extraordinary because it shows how charismatic Jimmy was, that in one single frame, shot in the way I shot it, he is just so powerful, he's so strong, and that's the image that's lasted.
If you've seen Antonioni's movie Blow Up, where the Yardbirds play a bit of a live gig, that gives a bit of an impression of the freewheeling, raw innocence of the London scene. It's very, if we could get on the Wayback Machine and go back into the 60s to New York or London, we would be shocked at the changes in topography, the way people are, the innocence about drugs and dress and sexuality. Let's just free associate a bit. Did you happen to see Hendrix play in any of the clubs in London at the time?
I saw him play in a club that was called the Bag of Nails. And I can't remember, to be honest, I'm afraid, whether it was his first London performance or whether it was a show that Chas put on in order to introduce him to the London scene. I really can't remember that. All I remember was being almost traumatized by the volume and the unexpectedness of it. And I think everybody in the room was just completely taken aback. And all the musicians who were there were just in awe of the man's skills, and nobody could understand how he was doing it. It seems to me, I mean, I'm not a musician, unfortunately, I can't play anything, but it seems to me as though they were all in absolute awe of what he was doing and how he was doing it and the sounds that he was making. And his image was just wonderful.
Of course, Jimi Hendrix played left-handed with right-hand tuning, so in a sense he was playing guitar in reverse. And this, it's been speculated that in addition with the speed he picked up playing for the Isley Brothers and other bands, say from 62 to 66, that this was the reason for his unique sound. You seem, Garrett, to have captured in these photos also a kind of feminine side to him. Was that your intention?
I'm not sure whether that was really intentional. I think that the period, there was a sort of, there was a slight sort of sexual ambivalence around at that time, it seems to me. The men were dressing up more. There was a sort of finery, a slightly sort of peacock quality to
it. The mods had survived the rockers.
Yeah, and they were going into this next stage. There was the Portobello Road, which is an antique market, a large street antique market in London, and there were stalls selling old military clothing, which was very popular. And Jimmy found this wonderful jacket. He took to that very much. So there was a lot of dressing up. There was delicate scarves, bright colours, very tight velvet trousers, boots outside the trousers. And Jimmy seemed to take to that. He looked great in all of it and wore it well. But it was a day-to-day, it was everyday clothes. Nobody dressed up for the photographs. I mean, he might have bought a cloak and another jacket, but what we shot him in was what he arrived in.
You're listening to WBAI New York, 99.5 FM listener-sponsored radio. This is Art Breaking, the Thursday Afternoon Arts Magazine. I'm Charlie Finch. Glad to have you with us. We're talking with Garrett Mankiewicz about his photographs of Jimi Hendrix, which are on view in a terrific show opening tonight at the Ambassador Gallery at 137 Spring Street. We're going to be playing Hendrix for the next hour. Let's hear In From the Storm.
Just came back, baby. Just came back from the store.
Again, we have Garrett Mankiewicz in the studio talking about his photographs of Jimi Hendrix and others. The show is at the Ambassador Gallery at 137 Spring Street. It's open every day of the week, 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. on weekdays, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, and 12 to 6 on Sunday. Garrett, what were the origins of this show, and was it difficult assembling this number of photographs for the curation?
Well, yes, I think it probably was. I'm not the curator, you understand. Adrian Boot, who's an English photographer who worked extensively with Bob Marley, amongst many other people, and put together the Bob Marley Show 2 or 3 years ago. Adrian's curated this show and brought it together with Shelley Warren, who works with him, and Alan Douglas of Are You Experienced. And I mean, it is—it's a fabulous show. It's very large. I'm not quite sure how many pieces exactly, about 100 pieces. And it's very varied and it's very impressive. And yes, I think it was. There's an awful lot of work involved because, as I think you know, this show is on show in about 5 or 6 different European countries at the moment. And it has been very successful in various other European countries. It's in Australia. And this is the launch here in New York of the American tour. And it's going to go on. It's going to Chicago. It's going to the Govinda Gallery in Washington. It's going to go on to San Francisco, L.A., Seattle, and I guess many other places.
Alan Douglas, of course, produced and engineered a lot of Hendrix's late recorded work and has slowly been releasing it albums over years in the 20-odd years since Jimi Hendrix's death. It's rumored that there's still about 40 LPs in the can. Is that true?
Well, I'm sorry, Charlie. I wouldn't know. I really wouldn't know. I mean, there's some great material, some of which I've heard a little snippets of Hendrix sort of making demos and stuff, which is absolutely marvelous. But I really don't know what's in the vaults, I'm afraid.
Garrett, let's talk about your relationship with the Rolling Stones. Was Out of Our Heads the first cover you did for them?
Yes, Out of Our Heads. It was called December's Children. I'm confused.
Yes, in England, it was back in the 60s, the record companies in America would take British records and re-scramble them and redo them. So Out of Our Heads was actually called December's Children in England.
Yeah, which confused me because I suddenly thought I'd done an extra cover and I didn't know about it for a while. That was the first session. That came out of the first session. And the reason I was working with the Rolling Stones was because I had made good friends and worked with Marianne Faithfull. And she was managed by Andrew Oldham, who managed the Rolling Stones. They loved the photographs that I'd done of Marianne. I did a lot of sessions with her. And asked me if I'd like to work with the Stones, which, of course, was about the most extraordinary thing at that time. This was 1965. They were always, to me, the best rock and roll band in the world, even then. I preferred them to the Beatles. I was more interested in the rebellious, naughty boy. And it was pretty innocent. It was just naughty boys, really. But it was very appealing to me when they first appeared on the scene, because I was only about 14. And they came to my studio. Andrew brought them to the studio. And we shot about 7 rolls. Including 2 or 3 roles outside in the area around the studio. My studio is in the West End of London, which is like the central part of London, a bit like sort of Times Square area of London. And the studio that I had was in a small dead-end street. And they were building, there was building works, they were building a new office building. And I found what was a brick cage, the sort of cage that they put bricks in that they hoist up to the top of the building. And I put the guys in this cage and took a couple of pictures. And then there was some hoardings that were just leaning against the wall, and we put them. And we shot in the studio, and we had a great time. We played football in the yard. And then off they went, and we had a really nice time. And then the next day I delivered the pictures, and Andrew was absolutely delighted because, unbeknown to me, he'd already decided he wanted to do a black and white cover. And he found several pictures that he felt were good enough for the cover. and we suddenly had the Out of Our Heads cover.
And the effect of the Out of Our Heads cover is to look through kind of a slit between two walls, and the band is kind of piled one or another. Now, there were rumors that this particular shot that you did, Garrett, started the kind of jealousy that Jagger had toward Brian Jones in terms of their photo taking. Is that true? That Brian was really kind of the sex symbol in the band and not Jagger at the time.
You see, I think it's difficult to remember because rumors and stories, they've all started afterwards, and it's really difficult to remember exactly. I don't think there was anything conscious. I'm not aware of there being any conscious manipulation. I think that Andrew Oldham felt that he had in this group tremendous physical strength. Not only did he have Jagger as a marvelous front man, a fantastic performer, but he had Keith Richards and he had Brian Jones. And Brian was just an extraordinary looking guy. I mean, people really forget, you know, how he was amazing looking. He was completely hipless. He was quite short. He had a large head and an extraordinary
and the first
hair.
Big hair on a rock star.
Oh, big hair. I mean, really big hair. And blonde hair. And great style. I mean, you look at it now and it's funny, but roll neck sweaters, sort of extraordinary check or plaid trousers, and white canvas shoes. I mean, this was really quite weird and unexpected and interesting and innovative. So I think Andrew was just simply spreading the interest. You know, he had a lot of good faces to work with, and he just encouraged me to put Charlie in front or Bill in front, or, you know, to mix and match. And Mick always was very strong, but at that time Brian had tremendous appeal to the fans.
Andrew Luke Oldham always wrote some wild Dylan-esque poetry on the back of these albums. Were your photographs the inspiration for his poetry?
Well, I don't think I was the inspiration for his poetry, but his poetry was always extraordinary and actually very spot on. He was always on the mark. I mean, it was sometimes incredibly pretentious, but it was always funny and amusing. He also had the upsetting habit of always spelling my name wrong in a different way on each album.
Oh yes, because I was talking to my brother, a Stones connoisseur, this morning, and people would refer to you as Gerard or Jared, and it's really Garrett, G-E-R-E-D.
Yeah.
Was it your photo that was on the famous L.A. billboard when the Stones went out to record in L.A.? Oldham ran a big black and white stark photo on the billboard in L.A., I think in 66, right?
Yeah, I think that was my picture.
Yeah, I think it was.
But I went to America with them in 65. I mean, you can imagine that 65 was the most extraordinary year for me, because not only was I working with the Rolling Stones, but I also got to come to America for the first time. And it was so exciting. Mind you, I'm still excited. I mean, I just love New York, and I'm having such a great time this week, and I'm enjoying every minute of it. But in 65, every sort of English boy's dream of America was coming true. I mean, here I was actually touring 48 cities in 60 days. All over the States. It was just wonderful.
Do you remember in particular a concert at Forest Hills that the Stones played that apparently there was a riot at back then? See, they always say about the 60s, if you remember it, you weren't there. So before the show, Garrett and I were trying to reconstruct our past here a bit.
But well, it blurs. Every city blurs. I don't know. I can't remember the difference between, and you'll tell me if there is much of a difference between Indianapolis and Sacramento, but I'm sure there is. But it blurs. But there were some extraordinary, I mean, looking through the photographs, some of which, I mean, I've got thousands of Rolling Stones negatives, some of which are marked with the cities that they were shot in. So, for instance, at one point, which I think was, in fact, in Sacramento, Keith electrocuted himself on stage, the guitar, and he collapsed, and everybody thought he was going to die. And I mean, it was very frightening. And Alan Klein was there. And Andrew was there, and somebody behind me said, photograph it. So I've actually got two photographs, one of Keith lying flat out, one of Keith recovering. But there were also pictures of extraordinary backstage events, sheriffs, police chiefs coming on stage, bringing down fire curtains, stopping the moment any of the kids get off the seats. The police were terribly frightened. I mean, they were seemingly frightened of God knows what, because the kids weren't aggressive. They were just thrilled and excited and switched on and turned on, and they just wanted to show their pleasure. And Mick, of course, was just wonderful at encouraging that and nurturing that. And I mean, he was a great performer and a great manipulator, and he is, of course, still.
Is it true, Garrett Mankiewicz, that Stone's bass player Bill Wyman was the major pack rat in the group and collected every program, menu, and photograph on tour that it was possible to get?
He certainly was the band's archivist. I mean, there's no doubt about that. He's got the most phenomenal memory. I mean, he seems to remember every check bounced or otherwise. He seems to remember every girl or lady or person with whom he spent time. He seems to remember everything. And I believe he collected everything.
We're going to hear a little more Jimi Hendrix, Garrett Mankiewicz, and when we come back from the musical break, I want to talk to you about the image that David Hemmings created in Blow Up and the problems or opportunities it may have presented you as a rock and roll photographer over the years. Dred Scott Keys has graciously provided the music for us today, so let's hear a little more from Jimmy. Stay tuned.
I dig this, baby. Oh, they got a little tune on around named Rock Me, Baby, you know. No, this kind of. Yeah. Well, Dave, we got our own little Rock Me, Baby, and it goes something like this here. The words might be wrong, but that's all right. Dig this anyway. Rock me, baby, rock me all night long. Rock me, baby, rock me all night long. Rock me, baby, rock me all night long. Rock me, baby, rock me wherever I will. Baby, you just don't know how good your baby is.
We're joined by Ben Hartley, who's done so much work putting this show together, the Jimi Hendrix exhibition, opening tonight at the Ambassador Gallery at 137 Spring Street, and up through May the 2nd. Can they call 715-1551 for information? Or perhaps, Ben, they should give them...
431-9431. That'll get you the Ambassador Gallery down there.
431-9431. Who are some of the other photographers in the show, Ben?
Dieter Hoffman, Barry Wenzel, who else we got?
Jim Marshall.
Jim Marshall's got some great stuff. Linda McCartney, there's also some work by Ron Woods.
You also have a terrific photograph that Jimmy's father took of him playing the guitar in Seattle as a boy, right?
It's actually a photo that he took when he was 16. It was found in Al Hendrix's attic. Tiny little photograph. Adrian Boot, the curator and art director of the whole show, took the piece, blew it up, colorized it, and you'll see it in the exhibition. It's a great image of Jimmy playing as a young kid with a red Corvette in the background, and it's a really nice shot.
A beautiful image.
It really is exquisite. Now, you know, it's amazing that the whole Hendrix career, from the first album Mario Experienced until his very tragic death, was only 4 years. I can remember waiting for each new album to come out, and as we said before, a huge amount of recorded work has yet to be released. Let me ask both Garrett and Ben, has this show, as it's toured, revived a lot of the myth-making, the speculation about why Hendrix died, were there financial problems, that sort of thing, as people view the pictures? Is that part of viewing the exhibition?
It seems to me that it's a celebration of Hendrix, and I'm not aware of it creating a controversy at all. It seems to me as though people really want to celebrate Hendrix and his music, and this exhibition helps people do that. The extraordinary thing about Hendrix is that anybody from any generation, every generation, who has any interest in rock guitar is influenced and affected and inspired by Hendrix, and that will go on. And I think that for an awful lot of people, they're discovering Hendrix albums in their father's collections and thinking that they've discovered it for the first time. You know, and that's an extraordinary thing. And this exhibition will allow all people who are in their 40s, who remember Hendrix, who loved Hendrix when he was around, that'll excite them because they're going to see pictures and they're going to be reminded, and they're going to see pictures they've never seen before, and they're going to get a sense of the man's history and his whole story. And for people, the younger people who are influenced by his music but don't have a real sense of him, they're going to learn so much from the exhibition as well.
I can remember the only time I met Hendrix was at Steve Paul's Club on Gano's. I think it was in 1969, which used to be near Lincoln Center, and I was there to see Coliseum, a band with John Heisman, Hextall Smith, and John McLaughlin. And my friend Peter Halley and I and our dates were the only people in the club, and who should walk in but Felix Pappalardi and Leslie West of Mountain and Jimi Hendrix. So we decided to get close to the great man, and we actually sat at their table nearby like some groupies. And Hendrix leaned over and kind of expectorated a little on me by accident. I was just like a kid. But it was fantastic to even be so close to the man for a few seconds. Did you ever take any pictures of the animals, Garrett, by any chance?
I never photographed the animals.
Were you a fan, by any chance?
I liked the animals very much. I thought Eric Burdon was extraordinary, and I loved the style of them. They had a sort of strange style, which I liked. I enjoyed a lot of their records. I loved House of the Rising Sun, for instance.
Now, between the Buttons and another Stones photograph that you did, an album cover, there are like four or five different outtakes of that that have been sold over the years as well. Where was the photograph taken? How did you get that particular blue tone to the picture?
It was taken very early in the morning in a park called Primrose Hill, which is in the northwest part of London. It was taken about 6 o'clock in the morning after an all-night recording session at Olympic Studios. And we were all taken there from Olympic Studios, which were about 12 miles away, in Andrew Oldham's enormous Rolls-Royce limousine, which couldn't get into this little park. It was too wide for the gates. So we walked up the hill, which was quite a steep hill. And it was a beautiful but very cold morning, and because we'd all been up all night, everybody was feeling the cold. And I wanted to try and capture that misty, strange, early morning feel. And that's why I put on this curious contraption that I built for the camera, which was two pieces of glass and some black card and some Vaseline on the glass, because I thought that might give us an interesting ethereal image. And by that time, that was 67, and by that time, Andrew had encouraged me to, he said, look, you know, we don't have to see all of them. And this is a great thing about the Stones. You don't have to see all of them, and you know it's the Stones. And this was a sort of part of the myth-making. And as we approached the top of the hill, we were aware of some music.
This was very strange because it's really early in the morning. And then as we got a little higher up the hill, we saw a single figure standing on top of Primrose Hill, apparently playing a flute. And as we got further, we recognized this to be a very eccentric and strange character who I only knew as Moxie, who was a sort of weird, long-haired, hippie person playing the flute, standing on one leg with his music on a music stand. And everybody was, and the boys knew him. And he was completely unaffected by the Rolling Stones coming up the hill. He was so cool. It was extraordinary. He didn't stop. He didn't miss a note. He just acknowledged their presence and finished, said hi, and walked off.
That sounds like a scene from Blow Up, Garrett Mankiewicz.
Is the Blow Up image true? I mean, it was associated, of course.
Was Blow Up based on David Bailey, the British photographer, do you think?
I think
sort
it was...
Of loose. Maybe it was based on you?
No, it was definitely never on a lilac-covered background, Charlie. based probably on the sort of David Bailey myth. There were three or four photographers in London who were contemporary with Bailey, who were sort of the bad boys of fashion photography. And fashion photography was really establishing itself as an exciting, glamorous genre. It had broken away from the sort of the Bond Street haute couture thing. This was much more streety, and it was sexier. And I think that probably it was Antonioni, wasn't it, who made?
Yes.
Yeah. I think Antonioni probably based it on a sort of a composite character. Unfortunately, you know, I was working in music. I wasn't working with those beautiful, you know, svelte women, and there weren't many rock stars that I can think of that I ever wanted to roll around with.
So you weren't around during the Stones bus when Marianne Faithfull was brought out naked in a rug after the London Bobbies busted Mick and Keith for pot?
No, I'm afraid that wasn't my night. I wasn't there, and I'd already sort of stopped working with them. They'd sort of moved on. They were working with a photographer called Michael Cooper by that time, and others.
Now, Garrett, your long history of working with musicians has not abated. You're still photographing prominent British musicians. What's your latest project?
I've just finished working, well, a couple of months ago, I finished working with the great British blues guitarist, Gary Moore. And I did 2 days on the road with him. We went to Germany, and we had a great weekend. I really enjoyed myself. We went to Frankfurt. And we went to Munich, and it was just absolutely marvellous. It was great to be working live, because I haven't done any live concerts for a long time, not since the 70s, actually. And it was very exciting. I really enjoyed it. He's an extraordinary musician. I'm not quite sure how much success he's had over here, but he's very, very important, very highly respected in Europe, particularly in Germany. And that was great. So I'm working on that. And over the last 4 or 5 years, I've worked with Elton John and I've worked with George Harrison, both of which I did with a very good friend of mine called David Costa, who's a longtime colleague. And it's with David Costa that I've done the silk screens, the principal one of which is the sort of flagship image for the show.
Yes, the Ambassador Gallery show of Jimi Hendrix has a fantastic catalog, which you should definitely check out when you go down to 137 Spring Street. This is a silkscreen photo process that you've used to produce this image of Hendrix for the catalog?
It's a four-color traditional silkscreen printed on very high-quality handmade paper. It's big. It's 40 inches by 30, approximately. It's very, very iconographic. It's supposed to celebrate the Hendrix image. It's supposed to be vaguely psychedelic, but it's something that we're very pleased with. We actually created it 2 years ago as the beginning of a long-term project to utilize my archival images to turn them into silk screens and to produce a portfolio of silk screens that hopefully in a couple of years we'll put a show together of maybe 16 or 17. And we're looking forward to working with some other a photographer's work over the next year or two. We're hoping to do work. We're going to do a silk screen of one of Adrian Boots's images of Bob Marley, and I hope we'll be working with other great photographers' works as well.
We're talking with Garrett Mankiewicz about his photographs of Jimi Hendrix as part of the group show, the Jimi Hendrix Exhibition at the Ambassador Galleries at 137 Spring Street. Let's hear Hendrix doing Like a Rolling Stone at Monterey. Stay tuned.
Well, the first jump was really out of sight, like you're in the plane. You know, some cats has never been in the plane before. Some people were throwing up in the, you got a big bucket, you know, a big garbage can in the middle. It was great.
What do you
but
say?
At the beginning, the plane is going, this roaring and shaking. And you can see the rivets just jumping around. Talk about, what am I doing here? I would have to start from the third person down, though. Like, you know, I was watching him. Said, wow. A split second, a thought went through me, like, you're crazy. And then all of a sudden, it just disappeared. And it was almost like blank, and it was almost like a crying, and you want to laugh, and pat the sergeant on the back, say, who's this joking? What's this, Sergeant? But you know, and all the time, you know, you say, what the hell am I doing here? And all, by that time, you're just there at the door, and all of a sudden, you know, this plop rush, and all of a sudden, then you're up like that, and then you just, oh.
I said, what's your name? He said, I'm Jimi Hendrix. I said, my God, where did you get that last name from, you got? I never heard nobody named Hendrix but the Iceman in Macon.
Oh, well, that was a concert starring not Jimi Hendrix and not Little Richard, but Soupy Sales. Well, never mind who Soupy Sales is. Anyway, he was singing that, you know, do the mouse business. And it was at the New York Paramount. They were just trying to sort of resurrect the Paramount. And I think the Hollies were in it also. I mean, they were the big British attraction. Well, out comes Little Richard, and I must say, it was one of his low energy points. I mean,
yeah, we're going to. This is just kind of the verbal introduction to the record soundtracks recordings from the film Jimi Hendrix, which is a film made, I think, in the early 80s. We heard Jimi Hendrix himself talk, and then a little commentary about the scene back then. Now we can hear Like a Rolling Stone. Uno Secundo. Again, the Ambassador Gallery Show at 137 Spring Street opens tonight, 6 o'clock. And take it away, Jimmy.
All right, now I want to dedicate this song to everybody here with hearts, any kind of hearts and ears. Go something like this here. As I said before, it's really groovy. I'd like to bore you for about 6 or 7 minutes to do a little thing. Yeah. Excuse me for a minute. Just let me play my guitar, all right? Right now, with Little Think by Bob Dylan. That's his grandma over there. This little thing called Like a Rolling Stone. Once upon a time, you dressed so fine. Through the bumps of diamond in your prime. Oh, didn't you? People call, say, but where, dog? You're bound to fall, you thought they all. Well, couldn't you? You used to laugh about it. Everybody that was hanging out. Look at you, but now you don't talk so loud. Now you don't, baby, seem so proud. Why haven't you been
taught you how to live on the streets, and now you just gonna have to get used to it. You say you never compromise. The mystery tramp, but now you got to realize he's not selling any alibi. As he stands in the vacuum of his life, he says, hey baby, would you like to make a
Breaking. Just a reminder, Shelton Walden is back from Minneapolis, and you can hear his show, Walden's Pond, at 1 o'clock every Thursday before this show, followed by the great Accent on Percussion with Montego Joe, and then Art Breaking. Stay tuned for Shelf Life at 4, followed by Talk Back with Playthel Benjamin at 4:30, and the WBAI Evening News at 6 o'clock. Next week, my guest will be Jill Cement, author of The Law of Falling Bodies, just out from Simon & Schuster, and painter Arnold Meshes, 72-year-old genius from California who has a show at E.M. Donahue at 560 Broadway. Be sure to tune in next Thursday at 3 o'clock. Again, in the studio, we have Garrett Mankiewicz, one of the photographers featured in the Jimi Hendrix exhibition, located at the Ambassador Gallery at 137 Spring Street. It opens tonight. Gallery hours are 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Weekdays, 11 a.m. to 6 p.m. Saturday, and 12 to 6 on Sunday. George Harrison, pretty boring, normal guy to photograph?
Well, not really, to be honest. He wasn't really boring. In fact, he was very interesting, and he was very nice. I'd met him a couple of times in the 60s. I mean, I didn't really know any of the Beatles particularly well. I knew Paul best of all. But I met George on several occasions, and he was always very nice. And I was asked to do this cover that was for the album that was called Cloud Nine. And he came to the studio, and I was incredibly impressed by his naturalness. He was extremely charming. He came unencumbered by entourage. He was by himself. He drove himself. He carried his own bags. So, you know, that's pretty normal, because I've had bands who are absolutely meaningless come with the, you know, each one has his own personal bully and a box of booze. So this was, you know, this is quite something, really, the fact that he came by himself, and he was charming, and we had a whole day. We did several setups. He was very, very nice and very helpful, and he was a pleasure to work with. And in a way, to be able to sit down with somebody like that and talk about music and the 60s and everything in a very relaxed atmosphere was a pleasure.
Is it difficult psychologically, Garrett, to photograph an extremely well-known person who's been photographed so many times before, to try to find something new about that person, like a George Harrison?
Well, I try not to get hung up about it. I, you know, on that, we had an idea, we had a theme, we were going to photograph him against clouds, and I had a very definite idea that I wanted to do him in a black suit with his black guitar against a very bright blue sky with white clouds, a sort of have guitar will travel. Do you remember Paladin, have gun will travel? Well, that was my sort of theme. So I knew what I was going, I didn't really think about whether it was something that he'd ever done, because it was certainly not something that I'd ever done with him. So I would hope that the combination of the artist and me, we would make something new. And it was, the session was very productive. I mean, we got lots of very nice pictures out of it. And he was a pleasure to work with. He didn't put any limits. He was at the studio for about 8 or 9 hours. You know, and he worked really hard, and he was charming.
Jared Mankiewicz, have you been actively going through a lot of your old work from the 60s with thoughts of doing a book of your own historic photographs?
Well, I've just had an exhibition of my own in London, which I called Entertainers, because I couldn't think of how to bring together Mick Jagger and Bing Crosby in one show, because I did the last studio pictures of Bing Crosby.
David Bowie sang White Christmas with Bing Crosby.
There you go. That's credibility for you. Well, I did the last pictures of Bing Crosby, the ones literally about 5 days before he keeled over on the golf course. So I wanted to bring together pictures of Mick Jagger and Bing Crosby, Marianne Faithfull and Elizabeth Taylor. And so I just called it Entertainers, and there's about 60 pieces in it. And it's been running in London. It ran for 6 weeks in the fall, September, October. That's been an exciting process, and in doing that, I've worked more on the silk screens. We're now doing a whole series of silk screens, as I said earlier, and I'm also doing image manipulation. So I'm trying to give the archive a new life, and that's been very exciting, because I've discovered lots of pictures that I never knew I had. And the extraordinary thing is that when I did the pictures, there were very few outlets for them, so that usually one frame or two frames came out of a session, and yet I would have shot maybe hundreds, and they were discarded, really. I kept them in carrier bags, supermarket carrier bags, for about 15 years before I started looking at them again. And now every time I look at them, I discover new ones, and it's very exciting.
Well, Garrett Mankiewicz, we wish you Godspeed as you go out to the airport to go back to London this afternoon on this Maundy Thursday. It's been most informative. You're welcome back anytime.
Thank you.
Again, you can see Garrett's photographs of Jimi Hendrix and other photographers in the show at the Jimi Hendrix exhibition at the Ambassador Gallery at 137 Spring Street, open every day of the week and up through May the 2nd. Thanks to Shelton Walden for working the boards, to Ben Hartley for his help in putting this show together, and to the great Dred Scott Keys for providing the music. And thank you for listening. Good afternoon. We're gonna have a real